standing in the rain with his head hung low.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer on News Talk STL. Talk lines are open now at 314-912-1019.
Hey, looks like you like to get up early, so Monday through Friday, listen to me from 5:30 to 9. Mike Ferguson here, and you are listening to The Randy Tobler Show right here on News Talk STL.
It's the second hour of the show. Thank you for being here. Jerome's over there making sure that things are working properly as they should. Join us on Facebook and Rumble if you'd like to stay in with us visually and see how things are going. And make sure you call in 314-912-1014. 312, I think, is one of our digits of our upcoming guest at 810. That's Sergeant Betsy Brantner Smith. We haven't talked to her in a while, but I have several issues I want to talk to her about, including this independence incident that happened the other day where an eviction notice was being served by a court officer. I guess I don't know the full details, but an officer ended up being killed along with the court clerk, and another officer or two were injured. It's unbelievable. Law and order is just a thing of the past in this country. It's a great issue for Republicans, for conservatives, this election cycle. Another one is the insult that is, well, daily thrown at us as citizens by the Biden administration, by progressives of one stripe or another, in one elected capacity or another. Maybe you saw that this fact sheet promoting out of the White House, promoting this so-called bipartisan border agreement. I would call it the uniparty border agreement, for those Republicans who signed on to it. That, of course, was, didn't see the light of day a couple of weeks ago. Biden is still pushing this. It was where as long as there was below an average, a 7-day average, a rolling average of below 5,000. So up to 4,999 border crossers, illegal aliens across the border, as long as it was up to 4,999, it would go on business as usual, status quo. It would get better, because under that proposed bill would also include, according to this fact sheet issued by the White House on Thursday, the bill would also include $1.4 billion, ladies and gentlemen, for cities and states who are providing critical services to illegal aliens? No. Migrants? No. Asylum seekers? No. I'm reading right from the opening bold font text of the bill, of the fact sheet. The bill also includes $1.4 billion for cities and states who are providing critical services to, drumroll, newcomers. That's the new word, newcomers. And would expedite work permits for people who are in the country and qualify. Now, you know who'd qualify? Anyone who's in the country, no matter how they got here. Joe Biden, you are a vile individual. Alejandro Mayorkas, you are a vile individual. I normally don't call people vile people. I call their policies that. You're a vile, deceitful, deceptive, anti-American individual. I question your citizenship, sir. I question your patriotism, sir. These are not newcomers. These are illegal aliens who should have been shut out at the southern bank of the Rio Grande. But of course, it was Trump's fault. I don't know how people who know you continue to be your friends. Oh, I know how. Because people love power, and they love to be close to power. It happens in Republican circles. It happens in all circles. They love to, like barnacles on a ship, cling on. And if you are one of those people who donate to politicians, who are in politicians' networks, dare I say, boy, am I going to ruffle some feathers here, Jerome. If you're a political consultant, if you're a lawyer working for a politician, and you claim to be a Republican, and that politician signed on to this bill, would you please do me a favor? And check your betrayal of your principles at the door and ask the politician from whom you're getting paid if they would please abide by the first principles, at least rhetorically, at least in what they propose, at least in if they're going to vote for a bill, a vote, if they're going to vote against a bill, be vocal on it. Make a stand on the floor. Where is the dissent of our politicians? Where is the vocal voice of people who call? There are some, and those are the politicians that deserve our favor. Newcomers. Next, or what are we going to call them? Neighbors? Yeah, hey, neighbor. Yeah, Carlos, you came up from Venezuela on a mass parole system. Yeah, that's good. Hey, Carlos. Yeah, Consuela, sure. Yeah, welcome. Welcome aboard. Let's have a beer over the fence while we mow our lawn. Are you kidding me? And the fact that any Republican thought that this was anything but an abomination, that's what I worry about. How maybe I think, look, guys, this is the chance. You have a chance to hold Republicans. You have many candidates for Congressional District 3. You have, what, three or four candidates out there now, and there's some also-rans. But, I mean, you got some legitimate candidates. And ask them specifically, what is your worldview? Where would you like to see this country under new leadership at the Oval Office level, at the White House, at the congressional level, and ultimately elected judges and others? I talked to a judge the other day. I said, how come all of the news reporting we do on local crime, this was in Columbia. I said, how come all of the reporting that we do, almost every violent crime is by people who have had a history of violent crimes. We know they're going to be trouble. You know they're going to be trouble. The prosecutors know they're going to be trouble. And then they maim someone. They murder someone. They kill someone. And it was a preventable crime because they should have been locked up. You know what he said? Department of Corrections. He blamed it on Department of Corrections. Yeah, I'd love to be tougher on crime. He says there's not enough room in the inn. Maybe that's what we should be asking our statewide officials, our governor, those running for House and state seats and Senate seats. It's like, would you please shift some of the money from namby-pamby welfare programs to what you really should be providing in terms of welfare is safety for the citizens, the law-abiding citizens of this state? Can we shift from handouts and subsidies and, oh, there was the Show Mo Act where we give tax credits for people to come in and make films here? Hello? Did you see this woman that was convicted? She was the mistress of the guy who killed himself before he could go on trial. What's her name? I forget her name. The end with a T. Not Tecumseh. Tekenosha, something like that. And I forget which state it was in. I couldn't believe myself. I couldn't believe it. This woman was convicted basically of murder, capital murder, because she assisted her lover boy of killing her lover boy's husband. The cops were able to go to various dumpsters and find plastic bags with soiled rags, you know, bloodied rags and towels and stuff. They never did find the body. It enraged me. You know what she was given? 50 years. She collapsed. She's like, oh my God. Well, what were you thinking? I don't know about you, but I got a parking ticket the other day. I was having lunch in Columbia, and I ran over the 2 minutes. I fed it for 2 hours, had a great lunch. I was in Jefferson City, had a great lunch, a couple people, and I was walking out to the car 5 minutes late. Got a parking ticket. The next day, we paid the parking ticket. I broke the law. I paid the ticket. Are you like me getting tired of having to, by the way, did you pay your declaration for your rent? For the property that you yearly rent from the government? Did you make sure and get that declaration in by March 1st? Not only do you pay penalties if you don't pay your taxes on time, if you don't report to the government what your private holdings are, think what, hello, invasion of privacy? Hello? What have we come to? The government needs to know what you own so they can rent it from them? Now, on the other hand, having said that, if the legislature and the General Assembly in Missouri and the governor and everyone else had a sentient, neuron firing, and I knew that a lot of them are my friends, they're good people. I'm being hyperbolic here, okay? They would have tomorrow they would do a PQ. What is it? Is that what it's called? Where you the previous question? Someone would introduce a bill to abolish the property tax, introduce a tax system, the income tax, introduce a tax system like either I'll take my choice, and I don't care. I'll take them. Florida, Texas, or Tennessee. I don't care which. And we're just going to revamp Missouri's tax system, emulate successful states where business is booming, people are prospering, blue state people are migrating into these red state people living in blue states are migrating in, and just replace one with another. That's all. Switch it out. Today is the summer wardrobe. Tomorrow is the winter wardrobe. We're switching it out. That's it. But I digress. We shouldn't have an income tax. An income tax is unconstitutional. I know it's constitutional by virtue of the constitutional amendment. But from an originalist standpoint and from a moral standpoint, it makes no sense. Zero. Nada. Why do we punish people for productivity? The more you work, the more a politician, you give money to a politician to buy other people's votes. Hello. It's preposterous. Anyone that wants to call me and justify that on any kind of a moral or analytically logical level, let me know how that is going to yield prosperity. Instead, since 1913, when it went into play, it has yielded socialism, the gradual march towards socialism. It started with the progressives under Woodrow Wilson. It went on through FDR. And now we've got the Uniparty that just says, well, we're going to take a little less money if we're Republicans than, the Democrats do. Because don't you know, wink, 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 we're going to cut your taxes. You know what, to most Republicans these days, you know what a cut in taxes is? It's a decrease in the increase that was planned. I don't know. Last time I checked, when my salary's cut, they didn't say, well, we were going to give you 5%, but we only gave you 2%. I'm sorry. No, we're going to take what we gave you last year and give you 2% less. That is a cut. So we live in a society now and in America where words don't mean what they say. Politicians spin things so much that you're dizzy. You need to take some antivert because of the vertigo. And unless we start to turn it around, all is lost. I mean, we are now accumulating debt at a rate that the debt service alone is going to cripple this nation. That becomes an issue of national security. Oh, and then there's the woke. I didn't get to the woke. I've got some woke that you won't believe. You better be careful about who your surgeon is these days. Better ask them where they were trained and if they were recruited by a DEI or were responsible for DEI policies at the medical school, the medical training program. Holy cow. Jerome, do you have that? I've got to play this. This is a surgical resident at Duke University, one of the elite universities, medical schools in this country, on the order of Washington University here in St. Louis, and St. Louis U, another great institution too. I happen to be biased. I went to Wash U, but I love you guys at St. Louis U. Great docs. This is Vignesh Raman, a surgical resident, talking about, I think, probably many, many, many of you. And when he walks into a room and meets a person on whom he's going to do surgery, what is going through his mind? You ask me, ladies and gentlemen, if someone is trained in Duke, Wash U's gone woke, many of these medical schools are now all about DEI, which is going to lead to you maybe DIEing, that's dying. Because listen to the bias they bring to this operating room and the scalpel. Listen to this.
We treat patients who are just from the community. in the South. And yes, my heart sinks every time I go into a room and I watch them watching Fox News, or they have a MAGA hat on, or they're wearing a Confederate belt, right? These are the patients that we treat. But Geraldine, I will say that the one very good thing about the South that I enjoy is exactly what I alluded to earlier, is that we don't treat VIPs. We treat people from our community.
Okay. His heart drops when he sees you watching Fox News wearing a MAGA cap. Hello, hello. He later went on to say that at Duke, he's proud to say that they no longer look at metrics. They look at a holistic assessment of applicants. So they're not looking at MCAT scores. They're not looking at surgery, what would turn into potential surgical judgment, the ability to assimilate and analyze your symptoms and decide if and when and how you need surgery. No, 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 no. He says, in addition, they look at a person's life story and why they wanted to be a surgeon. Be very careful, folks. When you see someone who's young and trained at an elite university, almost any university now, medical training program, ask them if they're biased against you. Tell them ask them their politics. Maybe that's what we need to start doing now. I don't know. Has it come to that? We'll ask Bob Onder, a fantastic doctor, also an attorney, and by the way, a candidate for Blaine Lutkemeyer's seat, in just a minute when we talk to him from the ground view. Up close and personal as he gets ready to participate in the caucus this morning. Stay there. More coming up on the Randy Tobler Show.
I've been running in circles, jumping the hurdles, getting caught in that rush of doing so much. I'm feeling kind of worn out.
Randy Tobler, truth warrior, woke destroyer. On News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter.
Welcome back to the program. It's always a pleasure to talk with my friend and colleague in medical business, because he's a much smarter guy, allergy and immunologist, and I'm just a regular old grunt, you know. He's one of the smart dudes. He does research, and he researches constitutional conservatism, and he puts it into action, previously at the state Senate, now running for congressional district number 3. Bob, thanks for joining me. Welcome.
It's great to be back, Randy.
Hey, I really thought you did a great job the other night at the Boone County Republican Lincoln days. I know you've been around the state, and you're on the ground ahead of the GOP caucus for president this morning. Tell us about the buzz going on there. And I know, being a veteran of caucuses, having been a Trump delegate up in Iowa and an ambassador up there, tell us about what you expect and what folks can expect when they come out to the caucus today.
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement today, Randy. You know, actually, we've been choosing our nominee, our Republican nominee for president, by the caucus system for actually quite a few years, for as long as I can remember. I think what makes this year different is we are not having the so-called presidential preference primary. That was actually never binding, you know, anyway. But in any case, this is how we choose our nominee for president. I think we all know who that's going to be, Donald J. Trump. And people are excited about that. Now, it's kind of funny. I believe I'm hearing that in some areas, there are caucuses where there are never Trumpers launching their alternative Trump slate against Donald Trump. But look, I think, Donald J. Trump's going to be our nominee. I think we need to return to those days of low inflation, high employment, energy independence, being respected abroad so that we're at peace, not bumbling from one crisis to another, and really getting wokeness out of our educational system and out of our out of our pockets, actually, because we are funding a lot of wokeness and a lot of indoctrination. People are excited for Donald Trump and to get on to that next stage of the convention and then on to November.
Now, Bob, as we move to the congressional third district race, it's going to be a tight race. It's going to be an interesting one. And I know that you bring to the table a track record of very, I think, first principles conservatism. I've been talking throughout the show about how so many people who would like to see the GOP become a true small R Republican, small R you know, a federalist oriented, where the states hold the money and the power type of a party. But we've seen it tack towards more of a uniparty mentality. What would you do to bring that philosophy to D.C. if you were elected? And what specific, you know, policy positions could move us in that direction?
Well, right. I mean, Randy, I've said many times, if you cannot stand up to the Jefferson City swamp, you'll never stand up to the D.C. swamp. And, you know, Randy, in the legislature, I have been a part, in many cases, the bill sponsor, if not playing a pivotal role in doing almost every good thing that you've heard the legislature do over the last decade, whether it be standing up for Second Amendment rights like constitutional carry or the Second Amendment Preservation Act, two major tax cuts, stopping catch and release and banning sanctuary cities for illegal aliens. All those things have been a fight. The establishment swamp in Jefferson City, the uniparty, the rhinos, whatever word you want to use, never wanted to do any of those things. But, you know, my colleagues, the conservative caucus in the House and in the Senate, we pushed those things and pushed those things and we got them done. It is the same kind of fight in Washington, D.C. You know, the uniparty is doing their agenda. So, no, in D.C., I think first and foremost, controlling the border. Although we have a very strong law that I wrote in Missouri to fight illegal immigration, really the problem today is that we have 7 million illegal aliens who have invaded our southern border, which is, you know, which is a rate. I represented the city of Wentzville in Jefferson City. You can fill up the city of Wentzville in 3 days at that rate of immigration. We need to secure the border. We need to rein in the overspending, end the socialistic policies of the Biden administration, and abolish the Department of Education. The federal government has not been productive in our educational system at all.
Bob, we were talking earlier about how I was talking with an author who has analyzed democratic societies from Greece forward and the formerly small R Republican Constitution Republic that we have in, that we used to have in the United States. But we're talking about how there are so many special interests that are so dependent on, you know, the circuitous route from citizens pay their homage to D.C., take a big chunk out of it and then give it back to farmers, to doctors, to business people and grants to, you know, on and on and on. I mean, one way or another, small businesses, one way or another, everyone seems to be dependent, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, you know, on the government. Is there any hope that we can get to a point where we really can start bringing those programs gradually to a close, or at least have across the board cuts if we're going to do omnibus bills? What is the hope that Mike Johnson has raised where we could get individual appropriations bills, trim those one by one by one, and gradually return the money and the power to the people of the states?
Well, yeah, a lot of issues there. You know, first of all, we really, the Congress has not gone through the regular budget process and passed individual budget bills for many, many years. So yes, we need to get back. We need to get back to regular order of constitutionally passing budgets again. But there are many, many areas in discretionary spending that I view as very low hanging fruit. Pulling back the unspent COVID funds rather than just distributing them to various levels of government. You know, ending the ridiculous green energy subsidies that were part of the Biden misnamed Inflation Reduction Act. Reining in federal regulations like as through the RAINS Act. But regarding entitlements, you know, when you're in a hole, you've got to stop digging. And if anything, we've done the exact opposite, both in Washington, D.C. and in Jefferson City. Just in the last a couple of years. The legislature in Jeff City has expanded food stamps. In fact, one of my opponents is the author of that, expanding food stamps and TANF welfare checks. There was what I call Biden Care Medicaid expansion, which would indirectly act as a subsidy for abortion just last year. We've got to stop digging, and the Biden administration will always come up with another way to expand the welfare state. And entitlements are eating up more and more of our money all the time. And as you put it, they take our money and then they send it back to the states, and then they force the states to jump through the hoops in order for taxpayers to get some of their money back. It's a ridiculous system and badly needs to be reformed.
Bob, I know you've got to get to the caucus. We won't take too much more of your time, but one of the comments on our video stream is talking about how capitalism can't survive without social programs. Where should what jurisdiction of government should be responsible for a basic safety net, and how high or low should that safety net be? I don't think any of us have a problem with people who, by no virtue of their own, find themselves in a tough spot and probably feel as though there's some place. Is that at the federal government, the state government, the local government? Where should it be, and should it be a safety net or a hammock?
Well, yeah, that I was about to cite that Ronald Reagan quote, no one ever intended the social safety net to become a hammock. And it's become a hammock. It's very clear. And we saw more, more hammock type programs in the course of the so-called fight against COVID. We saw since January of 2020, we've seen 1,700,000 American workers leave the workforce. And a lot of that came along with all of the stimulus checks and that were supposed to somehow be fighting a virus. I think our social so-called safety net has become entirely too large. Whenever the left wants to talk about this or that program, or we conservatives try to reform one of these programs, we talk about it in abstract. But when you add up the total value of a TANF welfare check and a Medicaid card and food stamps and child care subsidies and on and on and on, housing assistance, it becomes the case that many people unfortunately decide it's easier to stay at home watching TV or playing video games in one's basement rather than getting out and being a productive part of the workforce. This isn't good for society or for the taxpayers, but it's not good for those individuals either. It's not good for those families that generation after generation live that way. So really, we do badly need to reform those programs.
We're talking with Dr. Bob Onder, candidate for Blaine Lutkemeyer's seat, and I think everyone recognizes Blaine's done some great service for the area. Has certainly served well in the Financial Services Committee, and we thank him for his service. And Bob, I know you, being a medical doc, and will certainly have a role in that should you be elected to CD3. Wonder what your thoughts are about. Being an internist, an allergy and immunologist, you deal with some respiratory issues right now and then. The CDC has aligned their COVID-19 guidances regarding no longer needing to routinely stay away from others for 5 days, aligning it with the influenza and RSV and other respiratory infections. What are your thoughts on the evolution of CDC guidance?
Well, yeah, look, I gave everyone the benefit of the doubt, in February, March, spring of 2020. But by the summer, it became very clear that COVID-19 was acting very much like influenza virus or RSV, the other very common viruses. It never made any sense that we should be treating COVID-19 dramatically different than other viruses. And it went from what I felt was an overreaction, the idea of somehow shutdowns and that we should socially distance and be 6 feet away from other people, But I thought that those were well-meaning but misguided recommendations. It went from that to, I believe, it was just almost a pure lust for power on the part of some of our so-called public health authorities. And I would put Anthony Fauci and Francis Collins at the NIH at the top of that list. And then when we started seeing the suppression of any kind of idea that some other ancillary treatments might be beneficial, not only hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, but Dr. Eric Napudi, a local chiropractor, was sued by the Federal Trade Commission for $500 billion for recommending vitamin D to try to prevent COVID. So the COVID pandemic became an excuse for a censorship state and almost a totalitarian state, being able to shut down our churches. Yeah. So now I think they're backtracking, trying to issue some more sensible recommendations. I think just because the CDC has lost so much credibility that they're now trying to align with reality just to preserve their own institutional prerogatives.
It's a shame. I mean, the way formerly respected institutions got politicized, and it doesn't stop with the CDC, the FBI, the CIA, the whole deal. Hey, I know you have to get in there. If folks want to learn more about Dr. Bob Onder, his candidacy, his policies and policy positions, where do they go?
Yeah, the website is bobondermo.com, and on Twitter or Facebook at Bob Ondermo.
All right. Hey, Bob, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it. Good luck.
Thanks for having me back, Randy.
All right. There is Dr. Bob Onder. When we come back, Virginia Cruda, we're going to talk to her about whether the colonel that we're going to play some sound from on Trans Recognition Day would be someone she could be proud to charge up the hill with. You'll have to listen. Stay tuned for more on News Talk STL 101.9 94.1, The Tobler Show.
Warrior, woke destroyer on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter.
So, inclusion is a national security imperative. We fight today, and we are going to fight in the future using brain power. And if that brain, who's going to revolutionize the way we fight in space, we fight in cyber, just happens to be in a trans body, you should want them all serving alongside me. And for your organizations, it's the same way. Those perspectives that we get from a diverse set of individuals, it's been talked about on stage a lot regarding the science behind high-performing teams. We need those perspectives. But it's inclusion that actually drives that. Because you can bring people in, and if they don't feel safe to speak up, if they don't feel safe to bring their full selves to work, you're not going to get the value of the diversity.
That is Space Force Colonel Bree Fram, a transgender who has quite a resume, master's degree in national security strategic studies from the Naval War College, master of science in astronautical engineering from the Air Force Institute of Technology. And Virginia Cruda joins us now to answer the question, why all the flap? What's the problem? Why all of the hoopla over transgenders, and not only accepting them as who they are, but now being asked to somehow embrace and celebrate and, change the lights on the White House and the Arch and the Capitol. What do you think about this overzealous promotion of transgenderism in the military, Virginia? Welcome to the program. Like your opinion on that.
Well, this is the way it always goes. First, they demand that you tolerate it. Then they demand that you accept it. And then they demand that you validate it. And then they demand that you celebrate it. So whatever it is, this is how they get it into whatever the DEI issue is, whether it's they did this the same progression. You can go back and look at how it happened with same-sex marriage. If you look at first you have to tolerate it. Second, you have to accept it. Then you have to validate it, which make it legal in all states. And then you have to celebrate it, which is that's when they use the power of the law to punish you if you don't, like the baker in Colorado. So you see the progression, and you see this with every new initiative that they want to force on everybody else. And the problem with the transgender issue is that while the trans ideology certainly exists and is pernicious, and there are certainly people who have gender dysphoria, but I far fewer than are claiming it today. But there are certainly people who do have gender dysphoria. We're being told that in order to be accepting of these people, instead of giving them the tough love and the treatment that they need, we must now facilitate their delusion.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it, Virginia.
That is not healthy. Like, if your child tells you, "Mom, I'm a unicorn, you must only feed me hay and, you know, rainbow sprinkles," you don't facilitate the delusion. You say, "Today the unicorn needs to eat his carrots and applesauce. And you know what? How about some macaroni and cheese too?" You know, you
with
don't,
bacon. Don't forget the bacon in there.
Right. You don't facilitate the delusion. You give them the help that they need. And it is unfortunate that we have allowed it to persist in the way that we have, and that we have people in power who are willing to celebrate it, because that tells the other people who share the delusion, I deserve to be celebrated too. And then it snowballs very quickly, as you've seen. But it is a very telling how many people that we have in public office who are willing to facilitate this, and not only to facilitate it, but to force it on the rest of us.
That's right. That's right. And to make it some kind of a moral crime, if you just want to protect your children, who are vulnerable to dangerous ideas for them, from validation of those dangerous ideas. Hey, I want to switch to something you wrote about on the Daily Wire about the Hunter Biden testimony. There was, of course, there was conflict between elements of Hunter Biden and James Biden, the president's brother, testimonies. Unpack that for us. What does it tell us? Jamie Raskin says, game over. It's all done. There's nothing there. The Republicans are pushing on, saying, no, there's an awful lot there. Help us understand where we're at this point.
Well, to me, the biggest thing was Hunter Biden's explanation for, if you remember, there was that text that he sent to the Chinese businessman that said, you know, my father is sitting right here with me, and, you know, it's a very nice business you have. I'd hate if something were to happen to it, kind of. It was very much that vibe in the text, right? And 5 days later, or a few days later, $5 million gets transferred to Hunter Biden by this Chinese entity, or to a shell company owned by the Biden, by this Chinese entity. And it's like magic, right? So Hunter Biden's explanation for this text is that he was either drunk or high and accidentally sent that text to the wrong recipient, and he's really embarrassed about it now. Yeah. Also, he said that his dad wasn't actually there. However, phone records put Biden in the house at the time that this happened. So phone records put both Hunter and his father in the same place. So the likelihood of dad being in the room is reasonably high based on the records that they have. That's number one. And second, number two, this got to be the best accidental blackmail in history, where you text the wrong recipient and get $5 million a couple of days later. Like, where do I sign up for that?
That's some pretty good return on investment, no doubt about it, right. In time and texting.
I texted the wrong guy. And it defies reason. Oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. I've been blackmailing the wrong guy. Like, what? No, that's not how this works. But yeah, that was the takeaway, that it's just not believable.
Let me ask you something else. As a journalist and analyst, you have to be concerned about the goings on around Catherine Herridge, who more and more she wrote about problems, you know, in government, and had sources about FBI investigations into alleged Chinese agents here and so forth. CBS unloaded her. Then they were coming, you know, the government's coming after her sources. And now while it's been on hold for 30 days, a judge found her in contempt of court, fining her $800 a day unless she turns over those sources. What are your thoughts?
I think either we have a free press or we don't, and either sources can be protected or they can't. And there is no, if this is successful and she is unable to continue to protect her source, and they force this out of her, I think it speaks volumes to everyone in journalism today that you can be bullied into giving up your confidential sources. And I think, I mean, for a long time, the government has bullied people into trying to do that. And it doesn't always work. But with someone as high profile as Catherine Herridge, especially given what she went through in the last couple of weeks over her files, because when she left CBS, CBS confiscated her notes. All of her confidential reporting notes, which presumably included the names of these sources that she's not naming. And there were people who were worried that it was a backdoor to see if they needed if CBS, in order to protect itself, needed to give up the sources, like take her stuff and give up the sources. So there were questions in play there. But I think that it says a lot that the government is willing to bully a journalist into giving up a source rather than allow them to operate as a free press.
Yeah. Yep. Well, and they bullied Steve Baker from The Blaze. He was there on J6. They took him away in handcuffs and leg irons. That's a whole other story.
They're bullying anybody who, I mean, look what they did to anybody who reported on the Hunter Biden story. Like, look at what Joe Biden's White House is sending nasty grams to the New York Times because they dared to write that he was old. You know, all of these things should tell you, like, it's one thing to have a president say, no, the press can't cover this. It's another thing for the press to comply. And so, I mean, I rarely will I say this, but kudos to the New York Times for not backing down on this. Because the New York Times publisher said in no uncertain terms, we're going to continue to cover Trump honestly, and we're going to continue to cover Biden honestly. And if that means he doesn't like it, that's fine.
There we go. All right. Last word. Virginia Crudall was laying it out there the way we need to hear it, because, boy, there's very, very few voices that speak like yours, Virginia. We appreciate you very much. Thank you. Appreciate it. All right, Virginia Crudo, there she is, Sergeant Brett C. Brantner-Smith, as we talk a little Law and Order coming up at 8:10. Stay there, please.